should have lights sooner or later. Today, thank you, Gordon.
Well, I'm quickly, because we're going to go to the alto section and see where we are with the panels.
Altos, where were we? We were meandering around listening to all of you sing. And we kind of had sort of an effect of what each voice sounds like, didn't we? We got through every voice once. And well, let's see. How should we do this? All the altos sing, for he's the same great God. You want to go to the piano, please, Joanne? Why doesn't everybody just sing this song, My God Never Changes, from the top? C major chord, please. One, two, three, one, two.
My God.
Two, three.
Never changes.
Play along, boom check on the chords. You're mumbling, sing to me.
Thank you.
alto, sing the soprano line, please, on For He's the Same Great God. Altos, 1, 2, 3. Huskier. And Diane's voice is very husky. Up there. Okay, now may I have all the sopranos back in this line?
Three basic voice types, and none of them blend with each other. So, the voice type with a clear, pristine, four sound. We have four voice types. We have a light, covered, lyric sound with these three. We have a huskier lyric sound with those two, and a very bright, raspy sound with those two. That, none of those.
Husky's not really the best word.
No, it's not like the brass necessarily. It has some air in it. It sounds like slightly daddy's voice. But don't you love me really. Now, let me hear a key of each last week.
Let me hear you three.
The problem is, we're not in tune with each other. We're not in tune with dynamite. Put you on the back between the doors. Here you
are. Thank you.
Let's try this. Anita Fubar, front row. It will be Anita, including Harry, through Robin, second row. Let's put you, Paul, five of you, second row. And then you five of you, third row. Okay? So everybody gets to belong and sit that way, in that line. So now we have an indoor for you, and the other will be on the indoor. Yes. You're on the indoor. I did that because, first of all, now, what kind of way do you want to get? Okay. What's my And I thought that. And I thought, well, if you don't want your heavy voices in front, your lightest voices in front. A lot of times, I will place the very lightest voices in front, so I'll know where to hear them in this kind of a room. Now, in a good rehearsal setting, you would do just like we were doing. We put all the ladies up a big line, and all the men up a big line behind the ladies. Put the right kind of men behind the right kind of ladies. Now, this is music.
They didn't get it. Typically, in a new fellowship, you could be anywhere from, someone who's living, if you're able to put, two rows of chairs in a big ark in a multi-purpose facility or something, then you should sit yourself whatever's the best. And then have two seating arrangements. One that is the best for hearing and ensemble and rehearsal. And the second one, what mimics as best you can your ministry setting. Okay? Now, we don't have that here because we have such an interesting platform that it would be almost impossible to mimic that. There are very few rehearsal rooms in the world with 13 levels of, assorted levels, so it's really quite impossible to mimic. And we're forced into a situation over there which is not the best singing situation. It's not. We're doing it as best we can. And so we have you in voice groups and the microphones. You are placed substantially different in our house than you would be placed in a more legitimate concert hall. And the reason is we are dependent upon reinforcement. Lots of it. In order to get your sound out to the listener at the volume level necessary to lead them in worship in a church like ours. So certain compromises had to be made. And those compromises are this. I had to, and I had no idea what to do, and the Lord gave me the answer. I know God gave me the answer, what to do. I was totally at a loss for what to do because I know what music ministry sounds like. And the greatest pain in my chest has been the fact that what they sound like has never been heard by our church, except on recordings. And even that has been interesting. And I wanted it as best as we could with the improvements in the sound system to get what you do sound like into the ears of the people. Because when you are together focused and sitting in the right group of people, the effect is an astounding effect. You're real tremendous. I mean, it's really tremendous. It's like seating this alto section today. You get them, and they were pretty well close just by the way they sat. They just pretty well did it. But for this ensemble. But just a couple of moves, it pulled it together in a lot tighter sound. Now, I noticed it very well. Some people don't. But over there, what the answer was that I received was this, that we could not chorally blend the group properly and then mic that sound and present it through the PA. Couldn't do it. Because to do that, you can't get enough gain before feedback. See, we're looking at between 78 and 86 dB of level of gain. Now, to most of you, that means absolutely nothing. But let me tell you something. When a stereo sets at 80 dB, someone is surely yelling, "Turn it down." Okay? When you're sitting and hearing 80 dB of sound, it's like putting your head inside the piano and playing at a medium volume level. That's about 80 dB. Now, some of you ex-rockers listen to music up to 100 and 110 dB. True. But you got to admit, that was absolute pain, devastating, obnoxious, and terrible. Well, in our services, you know, the spoken word is running up to 80 dB. That's high level. I mean, that's sitting down in the congregation. You don't imagine the frightful sound being within 2 feet of one of them horns. It'd blow your hair off. See, I was working up there, and and they turned it on, and that's what happened. And some people I know around here would literally blow their hair off. But the answer then was to segregate voice types and group them together. Now, logically, I wouldn't do that, and I didn't do that here, with the exception of the alto section, because they were so distinct. Because you want to use different voice types to cover different, you know, you want to use the positive factors of everybody to cover up all the negative ones. That's what you do. So you blend all different kinds of voice types together into an ensemble, and you make just an ensemble of voice types. Otherwise, you have the brassy ones sticking out here, and the light ones unheard of, and the other ones doing this, and you have distinct tonal qualities in the choir, and you don't want that. You want one sound, see? So you mix voices up. You don't just shake them up like, you know, and increase entropy, but it is done with a sense of order and arrangement and letting this voice help that voice. And if that and when you do that, though, if one voice is missing, the whole ensemble can fall to pieces. In a group this small, in a larger ensemble, it may take several voices, but you can really begin to cause detriment to your soprano sound. For instance, if several key soprano voices are missing, not because they are the tone, it's that they are helping other tones. See, and all of a sudden, you know, that this group over here sounds kind of funny, and it's even that way now on the platform because there are certain voices that keep certain voice groups in check, keeps them corralled. And when they're missing, all of a sudden there's no focus and it sounds all funny. It doesn't even sound like the original voice group. But as we went through each voice by voice, what, a couple of hundred people went through, or 150, we went through a lot of people. Voice by voice, and we said, you go there, you go there, you go there. And a few people we changed around after we were done. But when we were done, if you were there, you recalled the effect of that thing. And how each voice group affected the whole ensemble. See? But separated like that, and just with no reinforcement, it still sounds funny. But what we do then, and what I knew the answer the Lord gave me was, you separate these voice types and then mic each one of them. And then leave it in the hands of the operator to create the ensemble. Because it's in his hands anyway. And you separate voice types and it's going to be easier for the operator. Because most of our operators don't have the foggiest idea how to do that. In fact, only one does, and that's David. But David does know. He knows exactly what I want chorally, and so he created that. And now it's a set thing, and they just have to push a button and they have it. Now, supposedly. But the problem is our less than consistent ensemble. Now, if we had the whole ensemble there for every service, there wouldn't be a problem. But to do that, usually you have to pay them. But in the Old Testament, that's what they did. They paid them, literally. And the Levites, that were the singers, had no mundane work, for their job was to sing and praise the beauty of holiness 24 hours a day. It's a lovely job, however. A little bit more pragmatic nowadays around here. Not that that wasn't pragmatic, but back then, all the Israelites tithed. Yes. No, I'm not saying that. I am saying that If our services were substantially different, I would. See? Yeah. If it wasn't this church. See? But it's this church. And we are in this ministry. The point being that the platform wasn't the problem. The platform's a problem. It's not a problem in the situation we're in. It will be a problem traditionally, in a traditional choral setting, unless you had a real crack choir. And then it would be a fantastic platform. And what's fantastic about it is that you can put 160 people on it and not lose a head behind somebody else very much, just a few. And now that's good. There are not very many houses like that. And you get a 160 voice group and they all know what they're doing. Then you do literally shake them up. And you have a bass here and a soprano next to them and an alto there. And I mean, there's no two basses standing together. And there's no two, I mean, it's all mixed up. There might be groups of certain, but there's just people standing on this hillside. And the sound is phenomenal when that happens. I mean, it sounds like one distinct voice. It's phenomenal. But we don't know what we're doing, so we can't do that. When I was in college, we did it that way. And we would stand on, you know, 7, 8 levels of risers, and there was only 40 of us. 42 exactly, I think. And I, you know, the nearest bass to me was somewhere off and gone over the hill. I never heard another bass singer. But I could hear the whole choir. I never distinctly heard another bass. I could distinctly hear the whole choir, though. In any acoustical surrounding, I could. Not just in an optimum surrounding, which we did sing in from time to time, but not real frequent. And though our rehearsal room was superb, it was really good. And we had 5 levels in there. And we sat differently in rehearsal than we stood in concert. But that sound is really remarkable. And to get 160 people to do that, especially without a conductor, would be a miracle indeed. But God hasn't sent us that kind of talent, or at least that kind of trained talent. And so we don't do that. And we get more focused sound, more energetic sound, by grouping sections together. And to get the most out of the group we have, we group in sections. So our platform presents a problem to us in that we can't mimic it in a rehearsal setting unless we rehearse on it. Okay, and West Campus isn't the best rehearsal setting for several negative reasons. One is, acoustically, it's still difficult to hear a sense of ensemble. And you can hear more of that in a room like this where you have more convected sound doing things acoustically in a live environment. It's a more dead environment in there. There's much less reverb time. Also, the piano was lost and gone someplace down over the hill, down by the brook. And so you really can't feed them proper piano unless you do it over the PA again, and then that's a rather harsh, difficult sound to listen to get it up to a level for rehearsal. You know that we have it far lower in performance than we would have in rehearsal in there. And it's a difficult room to sing in and rehearse in, and it's hard to get a sense of ensemble, and it's important in rehearsal to have a sense of ensemble. Because at least then, when you are performing in a less than optimum acoustical environment, you can reimagine what it was like to be an ensemble. And a lot of times you do just that. You imagine the sense of ensemble. And just by hearing your partner next to you, it keys off that memory. And there is more togetherness than if you never rehearse in a surrounding where there is not a sense of ensemble. So that, in that sense, the platform is a problem to us. It's not a big problem because we really can't we don't want to imitate the environment that we perform in rehearsal, because that would require raising the sound pressure level to 90 dB, having 3,000 or 2,000 people singing at you full bore lustily and gustily, and that is not the best situation for performance or for rehearsal. But in a traditional setting, you would never utilize our platform for a group of our caliber, unless you were crazy. And I'm not crazy, we just have a different situation. And no choral performance setting is like ours, unless it's a church like ours. where the choral demands are placed upon the choir, and yet they have to sing in an environment where the entire audience is singing louder than they. And yet they have to be heard above that entire audience singing. Now, I'm using terms pitting our church service, worship service, using terms that describe it in traditional choral concert settings. So you realize I don't think of them as an audience. I don't think of us as performing and all that sort of thing. You understand that. I'm using those terms to show the difference between our situation and the average situation. And if I had the misfortune of teaching in a university someplace, what I would be doing versus what I'm doing here. So we have to reinforce the sound electronically to get it out there at the dB level that they can hear it. And so that's why we segregate the voice types and let the operator mix them. Then he creates the ensemble and then puts it through the PA at the hottest level he can before it becomes painful. John, you understand now?
So you're saying that where we're standing for the West campus is let's say it's a function of the level of our ability to and wanting to communicate messages.
Right, it's that. But even if you were all top drawer stuff, I believe that we would still be separated into voice groups like we are and leaving in the hands of the operator to do the blending, because we cannot blend you and then reinforce that sound. We have to because the mics come in too close. See? To do that, you take a blended ensemble and move back to where they sound blended and then mic it. When you have a mic that far away from an ensemble, you can't get the necessary gain before feedback. So that's why you sometimes will hear a recording and the choir will sound very close and very intimate. Another recording, they'll sound distant and cathedral-like. It's because of the placement of the microphone and an additional electronic reverb added to create a certain environment. What we do is we mic them close and then add lots of reverb to make them sound farther away and bigger and more expansive. But it is impossible where you have a sound pressure level of 75 to 85 dB coming out of your main cluster and satellite clusters into the environment, affecting the environment where the singing is actually going on, to mic from that distance. So we have to get the mics in as close as possible so we get them into the individual voice groups to gain as much choral sound as possible and then blend it electronically with a mixer, literally. You are all mixed up back there. What you sound like really is far superior to what we are able to at this point in time make you sound like. But someday, it is gradually getting better. As we get more on top of things, maybe when we all lose our jobs and have to come to church or something, we'll have the same ensemble. I don't know. But be that as it may, that's why we're doing what we're doing there. Now here, to get back to Faye's question, my concern is, how can we have, one, the best sense of ensemble being split across the aisle, which isn't real good? How can I best hear the group when I'm sitting here rehearsing? And how can I best help individual people within the ensemble not be blasted out or not feel like they're the only ones singing because there's soft people all around them and this sort of thing, see? Now, this seating environment will not be optimum for everybody. It is a compromise. So you always think that when you want to complain. Okay? It is a compromise. So compromise it is, and we do the best we can in the compromise. It's going to be best for the overall ensemble. It's slightly communistic, I'll admit. You know, it's for the good of the whole, though the individual may suffer certain injustices. Our nation here is getting more and more like that every day. So, did that answer your question better? That was a long answer to a short question. Okay, now let me hear then. Yes, Doris? You mean, in a smaller church setting, you may have a large enough choral ensemble that you don't have to reinforce it, that they can really carry the ball, especially if you have the acoustically optimum building. See? that the coral group is, they're on a raised area, they may be on risers, and they're strong. They're a strong choral ensemble, you have good focus. I mean, you can take a choral ensemble of 30 people and have a church of 100 people, and they can outsing them. I mean, let's face it. Half the time, I can outsing the entire tenor section here. And I'll put enough energy and focus behind my voice that I can be heard over and above them and louder by a larger distance because they're unfocused. They lack vowel coloring and all that sort of thing. So you get a group that can really cook, so to speak. You can put them in an environment that is acoustically live but not too live and has a right... I don't want to go into a long explanation of what it should be. But you get the right amount of diffusion, the right amount of absorption, the right amount of reflection, and they can really carry a good ministry and be a well-blended ensemble and stand however is best for the choral ensemble blend, not necessarily for reinforcement. And they can carry the service. But as your church grows, that becomes literally impossible. You've got to decide. Is the ensemble you have able to carry it without reinforcement? If it's not, then you reinforce it. You add microphones to it. If you... Well, if you can't afford it? Well, teach the people to tithe. Well, then you punt. What I do in a situation like that is, you see, it takes 41 human voices to double the volume of one human voice. It takes 260 some odd human voices to double the volume of the 42. And then it takes some ridiculously huge amount to double the 260. I mean, 260 voices is a magnificent sound. It takes thousands to double them. And that's from a particular point beyond them and this sort of thing, not right up next to them. In fact, you can't get right up next to them and hear the effect. You've got to get away from them. So a lot of times you get one good, powerful human voice, and it's going to outshout everybody. You take advantage of that voice. And if that voice is a leader, then that voice can lead the congregation in worship, see? We do that here. We don't depend solely upon the choir to do that. We depend on the song leader at the piano. And the better the vocalist at the piano, the more effective the service, frankly. It's always the case. Now, we do have Stu and other strong voices of Mary Ellen that can, at the pulpit, carry the ball if the pianist isn't as strong a vocalist, which is good. And that's what you would do, like in Kansas. Melody doesn't have a real strong voice. It's a sweet, lyric, soprano voice. Doesn't got a lot of oomph. Where Nick's got a lot of oomph. So, Melody can start him, and Nick can carry him, or Bruce can carry him, or somebody else. And the choral ensemble can back it up, see, and create the crowd environment. Can create the sense of bigness of sound and richness and fullness that then draws everybody else into singing along with. Where if you didn't have that, just the one voice, the congregation wouldn't sing half as good. See? And so that's what I would do. Most frequency, like in Bozeman, you just don't put their two-man choral ensemble up there and tell them to sing. Use a song leader. Like Scotty or like Jamie, they carry it, and in a lot of cases you will find that that's what you would do. And then you utilize what choral ensemble you have to the effect that they are able to be utilized. See, and if they're not very good, utilize them some. If they're very, very good, then you utilize them a lot. Depends. Does it make sense?
Thank you.
Oh, I might, yeah. I would. And I would for, it would depend. If they're going to be hindrance, no. But if they're not going to be hindrance, they're going to be a positive effect. Because, for several reasons. You asking a question or tired? Okay, let me answer this one. The reason is multifold. At least several. One is, they are ministering. And that's good for them. They are having to be anointed. They're having to be up in the Lord. They're having to seem anointed. They're having to appear under the anointing and free in the Lord. Now that's good. It's good for them, and that's good for the church. To have a free in the Lord anointed song leader isn't going to inspire the church to really enter in and be free in the Lord as a free in the Lord anointed six-man ensemble. See, that's going to help the church. It's going to be a visual aid to the increase in the freedom of the song service. Plus, it's a vision getter. As more people come in, they see this group of people ministering. They're obviously free in the Lord. They're being blessed. And they are. And so, people will get a vision for ministry. See? And that little group will begin to grow. If you never have it, the group will never grow. And it will never start because of no vision. Until someone with a vision and an anointing comes in and starts preaching. And then you start with a group of six and there you are. See? I would use people to the optimum that I can use them. Daryl. If the situation was that the auditorium was going to be filled with worshipers from community chapel, not much different. Well, hopefully in a room that has 10,000 seats, you have a more sophisticated sound reinforcement system. I would probably use the same mics I'm using. I would use David as my operator. I would do the same thing that I'm doing, basically, with some possible, depending on the platform layout, some possible alterations. But if it was in a setting that the choir was the only thing happening, like, say, at Bell Square, which is a lovely acoustic environment, we go up there, I stand them completely different. I do things totally different up there. And the results are phenomenal. Then I'm going after choral ensemble for the most focused, effectual tonality, because they're it. So it depends on what kind of ministry it is. But if it's a church service where you have to reinforce huge gobs of choir sound, then I would blend the voice types again. Totally different. I would mic it different. I would mic it chorally instead of for hot level reinforcement. Oh yeah. You wouldn't hear near as much through the PA as you hear coming off the stage, but you would hear it. Like Portland Auditorium has a very sophisticated distributed sound system. I would mic it very carefully. And then under the balcony, you would think you were hearing the choir on stage, but in fact you were hearing sound from speakers. But the setting depends on what you do. Now, you may say, how am I going to remember all this? When you get to Kansas and you have six people, you don't have to worry about it. When you get to the place where the Chicago Auditorium is 2 weeks away, give me a call. I'll help you out. Okay. I'll bring David. We'll get to the gentleman then on Tuesday. God bless all of you. Thank you. Thank you. This group? Several years ago. A number of years ago.
I know I've been singing a number of groups.
Most people in this outfit cannot sing as strongly outside of the section. Most people.
They can't or they won't?
They can't. They cannot. And I know the difference. Believe me.
That's something that only we have done to trouble stage.
No.
What is it for? The tenor line so high it's written on the bottom of it.
No, this is a soloist line.
Okay.
And then this is the choral in here.
Okay, there just isn't a tenor line in some of those things.
Right.
Okay.